This afternoon, we have someone in our audience that serves on the Thomas Jefferson Soil and Water Conservation District Board, Mr. Tom Pradley. Would you raise your hand? And I think people know you. Okay, thank you for being here with us and serving on the board. And I'd also like to welcome any other visitors here this afternoon. I'd like to welcome the staff for being here. And, of course, the board that's sitting around the table. Thank y'all for coming. I don't see any of our future leaders in the audience. They're probably getting ready for the prom. Oh, and the graduation. So, who is that? Oh, yes, we do have a graduate in the house. She was a valedictorian of the Fluvanna County Leadership Class, Ms. Christina Guzman, and we also have Mr. Bryant that graduated as well on Monday night.
But I was not a valedictorian.
No, you were not.
And she can.
I learned something about her. She can play the piano. She can sing. Oh, she's quite talented. That's great. All right, let's stand, please, and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance and then a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. County Administrator.
Yes, ma'am. Before I start with the County Administrator's report, I'd like to do a staff recognition. As you all know, Ms. Porlacher's leaving after 2 years here as our Finance Director and going to a new position in Goochland County that has just been created. And we are certainly sorry to see her go. We'd like to wish her farewell and acknowledge her group from our park. This is from Fluvanna County, Virginia. The Board of Supervisors takes pleasure in presenting the certificate of commendation to Barbara J. Horlacher for services set forth in the following citation. For exceptional performance and commitment to excellence while serving as Director of Finance for Fluvanna County from June 2012 to April 2014. During her tenure, Mrs. Horlacher displayed unquestioned integrity, impeccable attention to detail, and made dramatically positive contributions to county finance operations. She established strong and positive working relationships with departments, agencies, and school system managers and staff to enhance communications and maintain an open dialogue. She coordinated the budget development, review, and adoption cycles for fiscal years 2014 and 2015, receiving numerous laudatory comments, with the budget process being the most transparent and understandable on record. Mrs. Horlacher led a highly successful effort to refinance 2008 high school construction debt, leading to a savings of over $10 million during the debt period. She also assisted in creation of a new county purchasing officer position that helped improve procurement practices and increase efficiency of operations through consolidation of complex contract service needs for all county departments. Mrs. Horlacher has been a trusted advisor, strong county leader, and impressive professional in every respect, and she led a dramatic transformation of our county finance operations and restored full credibility to our efforts. Presented the 16th day of April 2014, signed Ms. Moselle Booker, Chair, Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we will have the County Administrator's report.
Some people are having birthdays next Monday, and I've heard it's a big one.
Who's
so in case
birthday?
You see Mr. O'Brien, Ask him what's been on his name.
Must be 40.
Happy birthday coming up.
21.
You wish. Happy birthday next week. Talking about the search for, we got another nice letter in from really satisfied with the customer about the grant service in the clerk's office. And whenever Mr. Peterson gets those, he forwards a copy of it so I can add it to the list. And it seems like the list is growing every time we turn around. We get another kudos on that office and the great service they provide to citizens and many folks from outside our county as well.
He does a great job over there. I'm not here with a lot of compliments.
Yeah, staff is very accommodating and really does a lot. And even when it comes to just things that they don't have to, like the
passport
issues, which is a big service. And while tonight we say farewell to our finance director, Barbara Horlock, on her last day is this Friday, we do welcome Eric Dahl, our management analyst, who's leading up to the new finance director position. Eric has been with us for 2.5 years, and we're really pleased to welcome him to the role of finance director. And we already have the advertisement on for his replacement in the management analyst role. So welcome board to you.
Welcome, Eric.
You're welcome, Eric. And then just to spotlight the business cup of Joe, if you remember, they were way down on Highway 15. They moved a year ago. Next month, moved into their new position and new location, and have doing really well there. We've got a bunch of other announcements for next month on the spotlights. And but cup of Joe, we congratulate them on their move to a really good location that has a lot of foot traffic along there and a lot of traffic from the lake too. The monthly meeting that Mrs. Booker and I had with the school board superintendent and school board chair was on Tuesday morning. This is some of the topics that we talked about. The school board is looking at the possibility of backing up their budget adoption a little bit so that they can adopt in February. That way we have more of a chance during the month of March for work sessions and dialogue back and forth. Right now the school budget is adopted in mid or late March, and it makes it a little bit difficult to plug those numbers in and know where we're heading. Now, if they do back it to February, there's still the caveat that there's a lot of figures that are still in flux at that time of year, but we'll at least have those numbers a little bit sooner to be able to put into the county budget, and then work with maybe the first week of March would be the work session with the school board so that you could go back and forth and dialogue on what school needs would be for that year. The pending shortfall that we talked about with the schools before because of the ADM, the total shortfall I think is $413,000, but the school system thinks that we'll have enough to cover part of that, and so we're in the range of $200,000 to $250,000. We've been programming that for some time for coverage out of fund balance. We're also working with the school system to likely take over the wastewater treatment plants. That's not a core competency of school systems. It is more of a core competency of county staff. So our engineer was working with Mr. Winkler. Once we get a kind of a full cost history over the last 3 years of all different costs of going to run those plants, the personnel costs and the contract costs and supplies, then we'll sit down and figure out any transfers we need. And then we'll bring a proposal to the board on the potential transfer of the wastewater treatment facility at the middle school and at the Carriersbrook Elementary School complex. So from a county perspective, it's money from one block moving to another, but it's the same money. Just different management day to day. And I'm hoping they don't want to transfer any school teaching functions to the county, because that's not a core competency for us either. We also discussed the need about the big middle school project renovation coming up. Our county engineer and our purchasing officer will work with school staff to help kind of the preliminaries on designing the project scope and the flow and the timing of the big middle school renovation with the HVAC renovation. Remember, that's three projects kind of moving together to be funded at one time, but it'll probably take a multi-year time frame to be able to finish that project because we can shut the school down in the middle of the school year. And so we'll meet with them to assist a little bit on the front end, maybe with the contracting part, but also with the technical engineering expertise to be able to get an RFP on the street for that project, and also to identify project manager needs for that big scope project that will take some period of time to finish. And then the superintendent's also going to be setting up opportunities for middle school to train supervisors that are interested so that you can see kind of what the facility is like now that this renovation is going to be working towards fixing. So Ms. Booker, anything else that you want to add?
No, you've covered everything. Thank you.
Any questions from the board on our The county staff also met with school staff this week to talk about the old fitness equipment that's at the Carysburg gym. We had said we'd potentially move that out, sell it off, but check with the school system first. The school system is actually interested in all of that equipment. And so we'll see how that transfer goes, but I'll negotiate back and forth with our school colleagues to see if we can maybe use one of those fitness rooms or something. But anyway, that should get the equipment moved out of the Carysburg basement so we can start renovations down there sometime in the summer and then get the MACA moved done and the Public Works maintenance facility moved done. And then your next BOS meeting is the first week of May. You're beyond the budget cycle after tonight, assuming you adopt a budget tonight. So you have your regular schedule of the first and third Wednesdays. Remember, your first meeting of the month is the 4 o'clock meeting. And that work session that evening is scheduled to be on alternate revenue sources. And then the strategic initiatives update. That will be the first chance we have to kind of target that, fill in some of the blanks on the documents that we haven't filled in already, and talk about the way ahead on all those initiatives and the action items. Any questions I can answer to the board?
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Nichols. The next one is Board of Supervisors update. Now, I know that the Agriculture Forestry Advisory Committee and the Audit Committee is Mr. Weaver, and they don't meet but as needed and quarterly. So I know he doesn't have a report. And is the Columbia Task Force still meeting, Mr. Sheridan?
Yes, ma'am, we have. And I've got just a little bit from Ms. Groot. Talked to y'all before, and I believe that I've forwarded already to Mr. Nichols that the TGPDC has offered to help assist in doing what needs to be done in Columbia, and they just are going to put it before staff. Whatever staff says that they need help with, they're ready to pick up on. Okay? The FEMA grant is still working through award channels. The CDBG grant not funded. County received this grant. We are going to need a relocation plan to relocate 17 low and moderate income families that will need to be relocated. Additional commitment of funds to the project. FEMA grant was not awarded at time of application. They're still in the process of trying to get this grant. They're offering us their services when needed, but it will come with a fee.
Okay.
Task force discussion to prepare for next resubmission. We're going to resubmit the grant. Commitments of partners need to be assessed. What will each party contribute? So that's the thing that basically the entire meeting focused around is what we want to try to get done. FEMA grant environmental being conducted. Award will be in time to match March 2015 grant. And we also are exploring the potential of UVA, VCU, or JMU class project, looking into helping us for phased economic development for town. Basically looking at what types of businesses we'd like to get involved in the Columbia area. And next meeting will be the 25th of this month in the Morris Room.
All right. Any questions, Mr. Sheridan, on the Columbia Task Force? Okay. If not, Community Policy Management Team, I'm a member of that team, and we have met. We also work whenever there is an emergency with a student or a family. We are emailed all the people on that committee, and we can approve those things through an email. So it's pretty much an ongoing committee. I'm with the Emergency Services Director, and we haven't had anything since the last snow. Fauquier Sanitary District, we met and last month, and we had an opportunity. We've been meeting in the old firehouse where FUSD's office is, and we had last Tuesday, we had a wonderful discussion on alternatives, and I'm sure the full board, you all will be, a lot of information will be coming to you about raising, whether we're going to raise the rate, whether we're going to talk about an ad valorem tax, what kinds of things we're going to do. We're in pretty much a crisis situation, but we're still plugging along. We have to give so much credit to Mr. Wayne Stevens and Thomas. He's got Willis Thomas, they always call him by his nickname, and Roger Smith, and they have a new person down there, DeRush and Morton, for the work that they do in keeping that system running.
That'll be at your May 7th.
Right, okay.
That'll be a presentation discussion.
Sure. Parks Recreation, have you had a chance to get to that meeting? Because I know you...
No, I did not.
Right, okay. And Piedmont Workforce Council, O'Brien, do you have something?
They have not met.
Yet. That's right, they meet June. Okay.
TJPDC, you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, okay. And you also plan a commission, too.
The planning commission has been able to attend because of
right. Okay.
The fact that they the same meetings were occurring on the planning
board. Okay.
But the TJPDC did have the executive director accept a position there.
Mm-hmm.
David Blount is no longer the executive director. The new executive director is Chip Willis. He's coming from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where he served on the redevelopment authority. And he served as director of office and community development for the city of Baton Rouge. And also in South Carolina, he was the economic and community development coordinator. So I think he's going to bring a lot of good experience to the TJPDC. Everybody, the hiring process that they did there, they allowed the employees to meet and interview with them, and they were all very excited about coming on board. And David Blount, of course, did a great job, and mm-hmm. didn't feel that was right fit for him. So he was glad to step down, and they're looking forward to his leadership and strengthening the TJPC.
Mm-hmm.
So good things are happening there.
Great. Thank you. The Rivanna River Basin Commission, I've been to two meetings, and they're really just trying to reorganize and trying to figure out their purpose and, you know, and what they're going to do from the time on. And then Social Services Board, Mr. Allen Brook, you've been
yes.
to those meetings.
The search is on for a new director,
mm-hmm.
and it's running out of time, so that's going to run smoothly. Nothing else of any,
okay. Okay.
Anything
else. All right. Have we had anything with the Thomas... Jefferson Area Community Criminal Justice Board. Bob, you probably, I don't know if you've had any communication from them. That's usually quarterly as well. And the Virginia Association of Counties, VACO, I'm on that board, and I will be going to their spring conference in May, 3 days in Dinwiddie. And that's the 1st of May. So I will be able to come back and give you some more information about that. Okay, thank you so much for your report. Anybody have any questions? I think that will keep us up to date on what's going on. No. I'm not missing any board meetings unless I'm sick. I'm going on vacation. I'm not missing board meetings. I schedule around the board meeting. Welcome, future Fluvanna. Okay. If there are any questions, we will now open our first public comments. If you would like to speak to the board, would you please come to the mic, give your name and address, and spend 5 minutes talking to the board. Or less. No more. Anyone like to come speak to the board? Thank you.
Yeah. Len Boza, 26 Fleetwood Drive, and my comments will be very brief. I just want to let the board know that my wife and I appreciate your efforts in supporting the budget that you've prepared for the county. I believe that it addresses critical areas of need, basically the schools, emergency services, and infrastructure. and I feel very positive. You know, you have a sign out near Zion's Crossroads that says proud of our history and confident in our future. I've never been more confident than I have been recently with the way things are going. And I can assure you, no one wants to pay more taxes. My wife and I also, you know, always would like not to pay more taxes. But in this case, we really honestly believe it's needed. And I won't be moaning when the new tax bill comes in, because I think it's addressing critical needs for the county. And I commend you for your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have someone else who would like to speak to us? Anyone else? Then I will close the first public comment section. We do not have any public hearings or any public hearing. Now to our action items. Fiscal year 2015-2019 Capital Improvement Plan, fiscal year 2015 Operational Budget and Tax Rate will be coming from Ms. Hawlock.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair needs to read his statement.
Oh, yes. Please read your statement of declaration of interest.
My declaration of interest. Due to the nature of the transaction of the county budget, I declare that I am an employee of the Fluvanna County School System. I am a member of a large group which is affected by this transaction, the county budget. As a supervisor of the Fluvanna County, or as a supervisor on the Board of Supervisors for Fluvanna County, I am able to participate in this transaction fairly, objectively, and in the interest of the public.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone, again. The action matters we have before us are the FY15 through 19 Capital Improvements Plan and the FY15 Operations Budget and Tax Rates. And briefly, we'll just review what we did last week. The total Capital Improvements Plan is $31,763,539. And the part that becomes a part of the budget is the 2015 of $15,604,685. We'll also have a vote tonight on the overall budget of $80,105,825. There is a slight change, a shifting of expenses between the Board of Supervisors contingency line and the personnel contingency line and the staff pay plan. So the staff pay plan would gain $25,000 and be a cost of $165,000, and the Board of Supervisors contingency line would decrease by $25,000 for a total of $125,000.
And as you recall, that was discussed last week, that was based on VRS requirements, benefits in general, and VRS requirements, in addition to taking on board the stipends and treating the, most of the stipends as regular base pay from a VRS perspective for to be in compliance with the personnel regulations.
The tax rates are, of course, in front of you. The only change is in the real property tax rate, a tax rate of 88 cents per $100 of assessed value. The personal property and would remain the same at $4.15, and machinery and tools at $2. Are there any questions before the motions are made?
Any questions? Okay, board members, it's with us. We have motions on the board. We have some discussions. Do we have any comments with anyone? Now's the time. If not, can we have a motion?
I move to adopt the resolution entitled Adoption of the FY2015-2019 Capital Improvement Plan. I move to adopt.
Just one at a time. Just one at a time. You've heard the first motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, it has been moved by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We have three ayes, Sheridan, O'Brien, Booker, and two noes, Weaver and Ullenbrook. Okay, second motion. We ready for that?
I move to adopt the resolution entitled, A Resolution that Adopts the Fiscal 2015 Operations Budget, set the tax rates and appropriate funds.
Do I have a second?
Aye.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, a second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose?
Aye.
The chair votes aye. We have aye from Sheridan, O'Brien, and Booker. We have a no from Mr. Weaver and Mr. Ullenbrook. Okay. Thank you. A. Virginia Stormwater Management, Mr. Roger Black.
Madam Chair, members of the board, it's my pleasure to bring to you tonight an updated overview of the current status of the Virginia Stormwater Management Program. First off, I want to clear up a misunderstanding. Stormwater is addressed in two different ways in Virginia. Stormwater quantity issues are addressed under the Virginia Erosion Sediment Control Ordinance, which the Fluvanna County will continue to administer. And stormwater quality, as directed by the new Stormwater Management Act, could be adopted by localities or can be administered by DEQ. The extended mandatory date for local implementation is July 1 of 2014. We are still engaged in the development of an ordinance with DEQ and continue to go back and forth with them on that. Recently, the governor signed Senate Bill 423, which amends the Stormwater Management Act to limit the number of counties that are required to adopt and implement to those that are MS4 localities. Fluvanna County is not one of those localities. And as we previously thought, there was going to be a deadline where you had to declare whether you opted in or out. As it turns out, it's an opt-in only deadline of April 30th, 2014. If you do not opt in, you have opted out by default. Localities declining to not adopt a local VSMP are still required to satisfy new post-development stormwater guidelines that will be effective July 1. That is covered by the county's erosion and sediment control ordinance. At some point, our ordinance was drafted in a way that anticipated changes to the program, and so it currently states that the guidelines and references and standards and specifications are those of the Virginia Stormwater or Soil and Water Board, and as found in the Virginia Erosion Sediment Control Handbook and the Virginia Stormwater Handbooks, not limited to those, as they're amended. And so we believe that there will be no need to change or amend our ordinance due to the new criteria that will be in effect July 1. Because of ongoing changes to the VSMP by DEQ, it has made it difficult to finish the process of developing an ordinance. And again, we do believe that what we have in the ENS ordinance will be sufficient to make us compliant with the new regulations for stormwater quantity through our ENS program. We believe that it would be advantageous to most MS4 rural localities to have DEQ manage the program until such time as would be necessary to ensure that we have been properly trained and certified, that the state's automated permit registration and any of their project tracking and reporting processes have matured. Some of them haven't been developed yet. And that there's sufficient time for us to observe the implementation of the program as administered by DEQ. And also until we've seen enough time pass to see that the ordinance, state ordinance itself, is no longer going to be changed frequently or substantively. And with that said, Fluvanna County staff is recommending that the county opt out at this time. Any questions?
Thank you for all the work you've done this year.
Thank you.
The Ravana River Basin Commission has had a lot of discussion about this stormwater and whether DOQ will be ready to manage it and et cetera. And they would like to come out to Fluvanna County in June and host their meeting here. That's Green, Nelson, Albemarle, Charlottesville, Fluvanna, and talk about what we've done or, you know, what problems we're having, just a discussion. And I'm sure they will bring with them the other experts. I'm not keen enough to know all the rest of those boards. You know, all of them. You know, Ms. Sapperton, she's on the, she's a SOL, right? Yeah, she's executive director. But when we've had a meeting, there's been at least two or three people who seem to be experts or know a little bit more about what's going on, and I'm just learning. So hopefully we can host that meeting in June and see if we'll have the planning people to come and for you and whoever else is engaged in this kind of conversation to have a good conversation with other communities, rural areas, and also, Charlottesville is just different. I mean, they don't have the same kinds of things that we have. So we will let you all know in plenty of time when that group occurs.
Yeah, we'll look forward to meeting with you.
We'd like to buy some rent for you. This is great. Get some more money. Oh, that's a freeway.
Never mind. Oh, I was getting ready to say we don't
charge. We actually met with Allison Savington
Okay.
and a number of other folks. We had lunch a couple weeks ago. We're trying to do that on a quarterly basis now.
Good.
While this is not an easy recommendation, we don't necessarily want to walk away from this.
Right.
There's too many things that are not settled well now, and this is not an opt-out permanent, kind of like the VRS or the hybrid insurance plan change was. This is an opt-out now. We just don't take any action other than let DEQ go forward. We can opt back in whenever we're ready, whenever the training is set, whenever the systems are set. And I would anticipate that would be what the way we want to go in the future, but not at this point.
Right.
In some sense,
yeah.
Not ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope, you know, the more meetings I attend and everything, maybe I'll be a little bit more knowledgeable about some of this. This is a very difficult.
Mr. Bradley,
yeah. And I need to maybe
address.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Any of you have any questions? That's one area that we really probably need to bone up on a little bit because, of course, with the Ravana River being our river, although Charlottesville and all the rest of them think it's theirs too, but I don't think that they can go to Green. They don't even go past Green.
That's all ours.
It's all ours.
That's some of the tributaries.
Huh?
Some of the tributaries.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Black.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll move forward with just status quo, continue to work on our processes and our procedures and our documents. But DEQ will take on the task, as they will for many other rural localities, And then as we build the programs and their programs solidify, we'll come back with the recommendation when it's time to potentially opt in.
Okay.
Madam Chairman,
yes,
I think it would be appropriate for you to go ahead and adopt the motion that's in the staff report.
Oh, okay.
As I was reading this,
I see.
Was in opt in,
sure.
Was opt out.
Mm-hmm.
Record on you 100%.
Right. Okay, would you make that motion, Sweeten?
Madam Chairman, I move that the Fluvanna County not implement a local Virginia stormwater management program on July 1, 2014, and acknowledge that the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality will be responsible for managing the VSMP.
All right, we have a second?
Second.
All right, it has been moved by Mr. Weaver and seconded by Mr. Hollenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? 5-0. Chair votes aye, 5-0. Thank you. Okay. All right. Now we will go into presentations. Procurement report, Mr. Rodish. Purchasing officer.
Madam Chair, members of the board, good evening. Thanks for allowing me to speak this evening. For those of you who were here last time I did, I guess, my initial update, this will be kind of a refresher for the two new board members. This is just kind of giving an update as to what I've been doing since I've been here. So we'll go to the first slide. You know, one of the things that people ask is, why do you need procurement? And some of the answers that are up there, you can see it's a central location for any department, agency, and constitutional officer to procure any and all goods and services. Reduces potential conflicts of interest, creates efficiencies, provides transparency of the opportunity, cost savings, and most importantly, keeps everybody out of jail. Just to kind of touch on the provides transparency opportunity. When we send out a formal solicitation, it obviously gets posted on our website. That way vendors can see. But we also take the opportunity to use the Virginia procurement website, which is called EVA. From that point, we basically select the different codes that a vendor may be signed up for, say, for engineering services. Since we have a contract with engineering services, when we sent that solicitation out, that solicitation actually hit probably close to 3,000 vendors that were signed up for engineering services. So the potential for us to get more more offers in, which gives us a better, I guess, opportunity for lower cost, you know, quality contractors is definitely there. Also, it provides opportunity for anybody, the general public, that wants to come in there and view our purchasing records. It's all there. It's all transparent. If there's any questions, they can ask. One thing that I will pride myself on, in the 6 years that I've been doing this, not once has any procurement that I've done ever been contested by any vendor whatsoever. And there's been quite a few procurements that have been sent out. The responsibilities of my role, this is what Mr. Nichols had sent out in an email to staff when I first started. It kind of touches base on you know, the importance of procurement. Yeah, my job is to procure all goods and services, especially when we need to consolidate multiple requirements to get a better deal. Creation of solicitations, it's to ensure that we're in compliance with county and state purchasing policies. That's very important. You know, we can be more stringent than the state, or we can be in line with the state. But the one thing we can't do is be less than what the state is requiring. When we get into those instances, that's when trouble sets in. You know, with the help of the county attorney's office, we were able to develop local policies and procedures. Contracts management, it's always good to make sure you're up to date with all your contracts, make sure you have renewals, none are expiring, and so forth. Purchasing card utilization, business card orders, and that was with the help of Mr. Nichols in designing a business card that was, you know, pleasing to the eye and, you know, that would be, I guess, the standard moving forward for county employees. Fuel card management, that was the big deal. You know, we really only had one source when it came to purchasing fuel. That was from the schools with the fuel card system that we have now through the state contract. We're actually able to get fuel at pretty much any retail fuel site throughout the state and throughout the country at the contracted rate per the state contract. Disposition of surplus property. We've been very successful in the next couple of slides. You guys will see what we've done so far to date. Managing countywide cotton machine requirements, you know, we're trying to get to one single vendor for that, and we're transitioning to that, and we're pretty close to having that done. Purchase orders and contract development, and maintaining relationships with vendors. Not only when you think of vendors, you're thinking of contracts and whatnot, but it's really our internal vendors as well, dealing with the constituents officers, the staff and whatnot, building those relationships and you know, earning that sense of trust with everybody. Some significant actions since I've been here. In April 2013, I worked with the county attorney's office to create new procurement policies and revise any existing policies that we may have. Created a contracts database. This is pretty important. With the help of, I guess, some outside agencies, when I worked for Orange County, I was able to develop a database that was to track any and all contracts, leases, MOUs, MOAs, really anything out there. And they were able to link it to Outlook, so whenever there's a reminder set for a contract expiring, it goes straight to my Outlook calendar. That way I can reach out to any department and say, hey, you know, what do we want to do in this instance? And then created a master county filing system for contracts, contracts, leases, MOUs, and so forth. All the contracts are filed in the exact same manner. It provides consistency when searching for information. So if you turn to page 4 or section 4, you'll see a contract or a lease. Doesn't matter what it is. So in case I get hit by a bus, anybody within the county can go right to my files and pull up all the information that they need. This is obviously kind of measuring success, some tangible results. Since I started in September 2012 to today, this is basically what I've been able to accomplish from a either a savings or a bring in revenue. As you all well know, with the Pleasant Grove House, we've had our opportunities, and with some negotiations, we were able to bring down a projected increase of $71,000 to $51,000. So you see a savings of $20,000 there. Fiber internet connection by switching to the state contract, we're looking close to $5,400 a year. Fuel card, so far, we saved about $1,200. Surplus sales, year to date, and actually it's not even been a full year since we started selling surplus, we sold close to almost $28,000, which we have a lot more surplus to sell, so that number will go up. HVAC replacement, almost $6,000. So you guys can kind of see what's there, and to date, there's either an actual, combined actual and potential savings of $153,000. There are more that's out there. They're kind of hard to grasp just because we're more of a transition period, kind of office supplies and whatnot, but that $153,000 is a fairly accurate number as to what has been recognized to date. Some additional tangible results by using cooperative procurements. That's one thing I'm not sure was ever used when I first got here. It's possible. I'm not sure. But by the departments getting with me and talking about their needs, I'm able to go out and source these items through cooperative contracts, which allows other local bodies to procure off of another existing contract. So some of the items as far as cooperative procurements goes, office supplies, copiers, infield mix for the playing fields, vehicles for the sheriff's office, for county staff, elevator repairs and maintenance, fire alarm testing and inspections, the utility replacement for the Palmyra fire, that was done through a cooperative procurement. And just to give you an example of the benefits of doing a cooperative procurement, if the county were to do a one-off procurement where we go and actually put the bid out ourselves, the cost actually probably would have been 4 to 5% higher than actually going out to a large cooperative procurement, because the vendors see the opportunity for way more purchases from a larger organization than a small organization like us. So whenever we can, if it does fit our needs, we try to go out and do a cooperative procurement for the county. Another result, government-to-government procurements. Just on business cards alone, we saved about 56% by using a government agency, Prince William County. They helped us print out business cards. You know, we were paying $85 a business per 500 cards. Now we're paying $37 per card. So, you know, there's different avenues on how to procure stuff, and these are just some of the items, but just wanted to give you a brief update on that. There's also intangible results. You know, the creation of formal and informal solicitations, when to send something out to bid or when not to, compliance of policies. You know, someone needs to make sure that we're staying in line with what the what our policies say. Creation of forms. You know, we need emergency procurement forms in the event of an emergency. We need to have this information available so when we do go back and try to get reimbursement for any sort of funds, we don't have that form. It's a potential that we may not get our funding back, or at least a reimbursement back for emergency procurement. Account establishment. You know, there are, if you go out and try to get a line of credit, there's a lot of terms and conditions within a credit application that you can't agree to. This account establishment form has the basic information that they need to set up an account without the county ever having to agree to these terms and conditions. Surplus determination. That's kind of falling within the compliance of policies. If we don't determine that this item is a surplus item, we can't sell it. And then just going out and getting quotations. Those are just some intangible results. You may not see a cost savings, but the potential is there. Engineering and architectural term contracts. If we didn't have that sort of thing, any sort of item that required professional services, we would have to go out and do a request for proposal, which takes up a lot of time. It's just not, you know, a 1, 2, 3 day process. It's a good month-long process of getting the procurement put together, sending it out, going through the whole interview process, getting the contract put together, taking it to the board, and then going from there. From this, we can do task orders for, you know, certain dollar amounts, and then fixed assets, making sure that the county has all their fixed assets, you know, accounted for. It just helps with our accounting and our financials to make sure that we have those items in place. Additional intangible results, insurance renewals. Always we make sure we have insurance on all of our equipment, property, and vehicles. Purchase order creation. That helps with departments and keeping track of their budgets and make sure that, you know, they know exactly what they've got available to spend. Customer relationship management, building those relationships. It's very important that we have those relationships internally and externally. And another big thing, this is kind of one of my pet projects, but creation of GoFiles for emergencies. I've worked with Ms. Elliott in creating this, and it's basically a thumb drive that has all of the information that we would need in the event of emergency. If we can't make it to work and our servers go down, we need to have this information on this thumb drive. That way we can keep track of everything that we do, so when we do go submit back to FEMA or to the state to get reimbursement for funds, it's all there. And then also a resource for the school system procurements. If they have questions in regards to state code or how to, you know, maneuver through the state procurement system, I'm there to help. And this is kind of a review for the board members here before, but this is kind of a glimpse at our contracts database. It has an internal contract number, a description of what the contract is, who the using department is. Obviously, it tells you what type of contract it is. Cost, now it's been newly updated per request of Mr. Nichols. And just, it gives as much information as you possibly can. And this can be sent out, excuse me, as a report to the departments, to administration. That way we can kind of see what's in the pipeline. You know, 6 months down the road to say, okay, well, we need to start jumping on this in case we don't want to go through a renewal. Current and ongoing projects, Fork Union Streetscape, Pleasant Grove House Renovation Museum, the Atlanta County Sheriff's Office and Flavanna County Fire and Rescue Radio Project, the Columbia and Cunningham Middle School dispositions, contract consolidation, surplus disposition and sales, annual review of purchasing policies, fixed assets, and insurance renewals. Future projects. Everybody wants to try to be as paperless as possible. And digitizing all these contracts, leases, and MOUs, and getting them scanned into our network and having those on file will hopefully eliminate the need for paper contracts. Interdepartmental procedures, employee orientation program, working on identification batches for all county employees, constitutional officers, and regional procurements with surrounding agencies. This is probably one of the big things. The regional procurements with the surrounding agencies is going to help us better utilize county funds. We can work with other agencies to see what needs that we have in common that we could go out and do procurements together and possibly lower the cost of what we would actually be getting. And then our emergency contracts. The contracts would actually be used for the surrounding area to help out our neighbors when there is a time of need. And just staying up to date, October 2012, I was awarded the Brad J. Oakley Scholarship from the Virginia Association of Governmental Purchasing. December 13, completed my bachelor's degree from Liberty University. And May 2014, I've been accepted into the Liberty's Master Degree Program in Public Policy with emphasis in Public Administration. And the last thing, which is very important, obtained my designation as a certified public procurement buyer, which will be a benefit to the county in that when you have that certification, other agencies, or I guess citizens with the county, know that you have someone that is one certified to do that, and just helps with your ratings. And with that being said, if there's any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Are there any questions? Congratulations on your education and accomplishments and still going to school. Do we have any questions or any feedback for the work that Mr. Rodish has done for the county?
The savings on the restroom, you're talking about the white building next to the Pleasant Grove House?
No, this is actually the prefabricated restroom question that's kind of been, I guess, brought up.
Only a lot of $150,000.
Yes. Yeah, this was kind of after that was presented, I was asked to, I guess, see what other options are out there. So by doing so, Loudoun County has contracts with a company that provides this sort of product, and by being able to ride that contract, there's a potential if we do decide to go down that route of, I forgot what the actual cost was. So, but yeah, there is a potential.
That's a maybe. It's not a solid
potential.
Correct. And that's why I kind of put back on the.
Yeah, you had $105,000.
Sorry, I was looking at just the actual cost of the building itself. The total project would obviously be more than that because you have some site work and whatnot to go along with that. But as far as just the cost of the building itself.
Right, most of the companies that do that work do the complete work, including this. I did some work on that. The piping, the slab, complete. And that's what we need to know. I mean,
when we do the procurement, when we actually go out and get the procurement and do the bids and the offers, it'll be within the scope of the dollars that's approved,
right,
and as low as we can go to make sure that's
reasonable. That's all fine, but the number's up here.
I think he had, did you have a P beside it?
Yeah, I did, yeah, it's so the kind of not, potential one actually, yeah. But
can you put that back up?
Yeah, sure.
I think it was, may have got a P beside
it. Sorry, you probably did it faster than I did.
Was it, the restrooms at Pleasant Grove, was it one or two? We're asking for two.
Four and four.
Yeah, okay.
So the A is what?
A is
no, actual. Of actual, I guess,
that's
no, recognized.
That's really the same.
Actual. Okay, any other questions? Any other feedback? Well, the report is a very thorough one. It's up to date. Thank you for the savings that you have already done for Fluvanna County. Okay. Now we have our 2013 Development Activity Report. Mr. J. Lindsay, Planner. I always like this report. It's so colorful and all the, I'm trying to figure out where is this? I've been there. Very nice. Very pleasing to the eye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman and members of the board, this is the 2013 Development Activity Report. At the very end of this presentation, there are also going to be just a few short slides outlining the potential timeline for the comprehensive review that is now ongoing with the Planning Commission. But again, that'll be at the very end. Feel free to ask Development Activity Report questions before we get to those if you so choose. This is the cover of this year's document. A quick overview. The annual Development Activity Report includes information regarding development-related activities by various departments and agencies. The DAR allows land use comparisons and trends to be seen over time and provides an indication of recent land use changes. In other words, it gives you sort of a picture of what type of development has happened this year and potentially how that compares to previous years. Fluvanna County's comprehensive plan from 2009 continues to influence growth and development decisions in the county, in particular through the comprehensive plan's designated growth areas, which are known as community planning areas. They currently cover 11% of the county, which means that the other 89% of the county is designated as either rural residential or rural preservation by the comprehensive plan. 88 building permits for new homes were issued in 2013. This was a 13% increase from 2012. Taken together, that makes two consecutive years of double-digit increases in the percentage of building permits issued. 33 of the building permits that were issued were within the designated growth areas, and the other 55 were within the two rural designations. 13 new subdivision lots were approved in 2013, and this was a 50% decrease from the 26 lots approved in 2012. Two of the new subdivided lots that were approved were within the designated growth areas. The remaining 11 were in the two rural designated areas of the county. Most of the new lots, over 90%, that were approved within rural areas were associated with family subdivisions as opposed to minor or major subdivisions. 13 site development plans were reviewed in 2013. This was a 31% decrease from the 19 plans reviewed in 2012. And just over two-thirds of the site development plans reviewed were located within the designated growth areas, or CPAs. 8 special use permits were reviewed in 2013, and this was the same amount as were reviewed in 2012. 5 of them were located outside of the designated growth areas. In other words, 5 of them were located in the two rural designated areas. 2 rezoning applications were considered in 2013. One application was approved and the other was denied. No zoning text amendments were approved in 2013. And no variances were granted by the Board of Zoning Appeals, the BZA. And in fact, none have even been reviewed since 2010. 12 code compliance complaints were investigated in 2013, which was a 50% increase from the 8 complaints investigated in 2012. 10 of these cases were resolved, and 2 at the time of the writing of the DAR were pending resolution. There are currently 19 agricultural and forestal districts, or AFDs, which comprise some 18,694 acres of Fluvanna County, which is about 10%. AFD enrollment decreased by approximately 657 acres this past year. One new conservation easement, Central Meadows, totaling almost 666 acres, was approved, but as of the writing of the DAR, not yet recorded. However, since the writing of the DAR in 2014, it has been recorded as well. In 2013, 112,000 acres were enrolled within the land use taxation program. An increase, I should specify, that's not the amount that was enrolled that year. That's what the new total was after the 1,100-acre increase from the previous year. And that concludes the summary of the development activity report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair, the entire 100-page report is part of your package,
yeah.
So you can review through it with lots of details. And for the public as well, it's part of the board's package that's posted on the website. And that DAR report is very extensive, has lots of statistics, and you can look at the data from lots of different angles in the full report.
You know, I was looking at the implementation chart, what had been accomplished. The one was, there needs to be a complete for the Fort Hugh Fire Station. I think it was ongoing or something, but that's complete. When it is ongoing and future, when it's ongoing, what does that mean? We're going to look at it every year?
For the implementation? Yes, that means that we're not done with it ever. We need to continually look at it.
I was trying to. A lot of things have been completed, but I was looking at when we update the report, we shouldn't have a whole lot to do because we have quite a few things that's still. Will you delete any of those things that's ongoing that they would not be applicable? Do you think you would?
I'm not quite sure what the procedure would be. I would think that to maintain it in the record, it would be more likely to change ongoing to a designation of complete so that it's not gone.
It also depends significantly on the comp plan review this year. When the comprehensive plan is reviewed and once it finally goes to planning commission, the public hearings and to the board. There will be a set of action items identified with the new comprehensive plan. Some of those may carry over the old, some of them may have completed or may not be part of the new comprehensive plan.
Right.
So we'll update that action list through the planning commission, the action list from the 2009 version of the comp plan, and get as complete an update as we can. But we'll have a similar action plan that will go with the 2014 version of the new comp plan.
It's just that I wanted to see something that said, after 5 years, this is how much we have accomplished, more of a measurable type thing in each of those 12 areas. That would give me more sense of how much we've accomplished in each of those areas.
Sort of milestones,
right,
for each.
Yeah. And when you say future, sometimes that, you know, seems like you need to put a date on it somewhere. Because it seems like that's something that goes on forever and ever.
Yeah, right.
I want to know when we're going to get
there.
So those were the things, because I really was real advocate for the implementation chart. And I think, you know, I wanted to see the organization say, if you want to do the environmental one with all the completed here, ongoing here, and I was going through counting.
Sure.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But I know that's a lot of work. You don't have to. You know, I'm just.
We will. We'll do a summary chart because that's what
Yeah, right. I want to see after 5 years.
Pretty dramatically.
I know.
List of
we had a bunch of things. We were We were ambitious back 2009. Yeah, we were really ambitious. But I think that would pull it all together and really make you feel like, wow, you know, we did a lot of things. We did some hard things, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it was a very comprehensive report.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone telling them what's going on in the county, and maybe you might have some insight in terms of, is part of the issue. I mean, certainly we saw the economic decline, the housing crisis, and so the numbers dropped accordingly. But in particular, when you look at county growth and focus primarily on Lake Monticello, where there was so much growth to begin with, and then as Lake Monticello matured, the lack of new mods for them to build on from that perspective. Is there any aspect to the fact that there are no major developments going on that results in the slowdown of housing from your perspective? And when I say developments, you know, cluster developments are obviously small in nature, but nothing where developers can come in and concentrate for a number of years.
Well, it certainly hasn't happened recently. Like it's my understanding that it was happening here at one point. Although it if you were to look at a line graph of the economic downturn and sort of a line graph of development, if you were able to put that into a simple line graph, I think you'd see a pretty similar dip and a pretty similar beginning of a rise again. As I mentioned, on one or two things, there's been maybe two consecutive years of decent increases, and I wouldn't say that's enough maybe to assume a trend yet, but it could be the beginnings of a positive trend back towards.
And I guess you might want to look at the same results in other counties. In other words, and obviously there's somewhat of a scale there, but did other counties experience such dramatic declines in terms of their overall housing growth?
Sure. You
have to compare how fast we're growing. No, I realize that, but it's a big drop in numbers. I mean, you go from 700 to almost nothing.
We have 43 approved developments that had no action, no building on them.
Several small ones near us.
What's happening in the county now? Not all.
They're starting.
Much of what you're seeing were projects that were approved long ago.
Yeah.
Village Elves, the very homeless projects, and the ones along Lake Monticello farther up from Village Elves, and a number of other places where there's construction going on. These projects, like Sycamore Square, was approved long ago. As those catch up a little bit, and as the county grows, you may see more developments, but we'll do some comparisons with other counties.
Today's real estate report came out.
Yeah,
and
it was higher for the first quarter.
And it was for the first quarter, and we're ahead of most counties in central Virginia as far as growth, as far as sales, and as far as
over the same period last year.
And per square foot sales price. I think it's up 12% in average price, median price of the home sold in the county over the same quarter last year. So we're talking about the slowest quarter in real estate sales. So that's a really good sign. And all you need to do is get into your car and drive around and see that some of the 43 developments that were approved since 2006 that were never built are now sprouting up, and that's a real good sign. And VDOT's about to approve one of the developed roads and approve it very shortly. So those are all positives, I looked at the report today and couldn't find a negative thing about it. I mean, if we keep going on that trend, we're in real good shape. So I appreciate the 112 pages. I actually read them, and you see the same thing I'm saying now in your numbers here. And Mr. Nichols was right. You can take these numbers and you can spend 6 months moving them around. I mean, there's so much information there. So there's nothing but positive coming out of this downturn.
The thing that was sort of interesting to know was the houses built in 2013 at the lake. The median was $230,000, which you had listed there. Was obviously the median county is around $180,000. $100,000. So, yeah, and I get that that's new and me and so on, but it seems like that there's an overall increase in the quality of the house from that perspective.
It costs a bit.
But the differential is always been pretty substantial between outside lake and lake homes. I mean, historically, just always has been. Models back and forth, but the general value of lake properties, all lake properties versus non-lake properties, has been a $40,000 or $50,000 differential.
And the difference then is the land, not the
land. The land both is going up, and the land difference.
Appreciate that.
Okay.
And Mr. O'Brien, you had a good point about Lake Monticello. It was something that I noticed more recently when working on the comprehensive plan, but the overall portion of the county's growth that happens inside the lake is decreasing, but that's because the lake is built out, essentially. There's very few remaining lots outside of the lake. Immediately outside of the lake remains popular, and...
Yeah, so take away, you know, the benefits of residential or not having residential growth, to take that away, but when you look at what we've been talking about in our CPA, new urbanism, smart development, along those lines, there is this aspect of when you have a development that is kind of aligned in the interest of developers in terms of being able to come in and focus. And it's not just developers, it then moves obviously onto the real estate agents who can come in and focus on that one particular area. And there's certain efficiencies that are brought out of that process, and so as we have, you know, the lake maturing, we don't have those kinds of developments in the county, whereas other counties have some of those same things in place, and we're seeing that concentrated. I'm just wondering whether that puts us at a competitive disadvantage just as a trend line. I don't know that we can make any decision about that, but as we look at other counties and how they're developing, you know, should we be concerned or not if our motive is to not go towards new urbanism and we're still focused on cluster developments.
Sure.
It's just kind of a thought.
It's definitely interesting, and you can spend some time debating it in your own head, because there's compelling arguments for both ways.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You just have to remember every home built costs you
tax. And so therefore every county in the country will go broke.
I'm just saying, you know,
$100
in taxes.
I think that's always a relationship of what you pay in taxes. But I mean, if you follow that logic and you say every home costs more money, you know, even at 70-30%, you're eventually going to have all kinds of money.
Yeah, but is that true?
Am I wrong? I mean, I'm just saying. Well, I mean, it depends on
why. Everybody's right. Yeah, we'll be all right.
The tax rate is too low. Right? And I'm not arguing prior tax rates. I'm just saying that the tax rate is too low.
You could be wrong in the absence of any business growth associated with it.
That's right.
Then you'd have a problem, potentially. But even there, you know, there's going to be business and services and goods from someplace, so somebody's
going
to benefit out of it.
Yeah. I just don't know how you close the county's borders to
people
being
not saying that.
I'm just saying that development. I understand that, but I'm also saying that, you know, you can't avoid a certain amount of growth, so the question is what that growth looks like.
Okay.
43 development.
Another indicator we have in here is in progress, and I would assume that those are the things you're working on right now, and they will be accomplished in some reasonable point of time. All right, any other questions or comments for Mr. Lindsay? Good job. Thank you so much.
I'd like to move on to the...
Oh, that's right, you had another part. Okay.
More hours.
The planning staff and the planning commission have begun work on the review and update of the comprehensive plan. I won't bore you by reading all of these chapters, but this is every section of the comprehensive plan. Our current strategy with the planning commission is every month to review three of the chapters. We're right in the thick of the first three chapters right now. We've all looked at them and discussed them. Updating statistics, streamlining. This will go on through the summer with the rest of the chapters. Once they're done, then we can get involved with the implementation guide, both looking at what's there, what's been done, and also looking at what needs to be added to it. The executive summary, the introduction, and the vision obviously can't be done until the chapters have been done. That's why even though an introduction comes first, You can't introduce it until you've written it. That's why that's not until September. The updated draft we hope to have presented to the Planning Commission in October, where they can request any final revisions for a November approval before bringing it to the board for final approval in December. And that does conclude
the presentation. When you draw the community in,
I need to mention quickly that there will be public hearings during this process.
Okay, public hearings with the Planning Commission.
Public meetings. Community meetings.
Okay.
Contributions, but then the formal public hearing process has to go on as well.
Right.
But the public meetings process, we just don't want to do that during the formal work.
Okay.
Once we've done some basic preliminary work, then we can do meetings with the community, and then there will be regular public hearings that are required through both bodies before the compact can be adopted.
Ms. Booker, I just want to be clear that this will happen through the work sessions of the Planning Commission and our regular meetings throughout the year.
Right.
And public hearings will be held towards the end of the process, but those meetings are open to the public while we're discussing it, and we will be taking public input at those meetings throughout the year.
Okay. And we'll be pushing a lot of advertising about this because we do want the public to
know about it. Definitely.
But this is not the kind of a complete master rewrite of the comp plan because we accomplished that in 2009. This is a bump up and polish off, but I think there'll be some significant community comments.
What'd you say, bump up and polish off?
Bump up and polish off.
Okay.
And I'd like to reiterate, I think it's really important that we do have that outreach to the community so that they understand the importance of those documents and how the county tries to operate. I think if the county says it wants something, it puts it in its comprehensive plan, it should be as well thought of as possible.
Definitely. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we have our boards, commissions, and committee compensation plan. Mr. Nichols.
Yes, ma'am. Just you've got a large part of it that shows more detail than we need, but it's a difference from when the boards, commissions, and committees' rates of pay for the ones that received remuneration were adopted in 2008. What they've been getting paid, because there's actually some payroll problems here, I'll show you, and then what some potential recommendations are for future compensation for the boards, commissions, and committee members. Now, just at the start, I'm doing this in kind of the same way we do our staff pay plan. We look and see what we've got, what we do, how we do it now. We compare it to other surrounding counties. We look at averages and weighted averages and determine whether or not the compensation plans for the people that you have on boards, commissions, and committees is reasonable and fair based on the market around us and the work they do for our county. So a few things. These are the boards and commissions and committees right now that receive compensation for their services. Certainly your board, the planning commission, may be the most prominent of those just because of the amount of dollars that are paid for those and the amount of time invested in those board duties. But a number of other boards and commissions and representatives are compensated as well. These compensation levels were set back in 2008, as I said. When they were set, though, the pay was calculated in 2008. The reason the change happened then was that there was a determination made that board member pay had to be paid as if they were employees and had to go through our payroll tax system. In other words, people used to get $50 for a meeting, but it wasn't ever put through taxes, and if it was more than $600 a year, then we had to put out a 1099 form from the county so they could claim it through their taxes. In 2008, it was determined that they should be considered as employees for tax purposes, so what happened is someone that was making $50, the board at that time decided to plus it up to $55, so that then when taxes came out, they still got the original $50. Essentially, a whole harmless increase. When those were calculated at that time, it was a reasonable number. The numbers looked good. It made sense in 2008. But whoever initially loaded them, they took the annual amount, let's say $1,200. And if you divide the annual amount by 24, you would get a certain number of paychecks out of that. The problem is we pay 26 times a year. And so it was never corrected in the system. And some boards and commissions had their annual amount divided by 24, but paid 26 times.
So over the course of the last few years, there's been about $1,000 or so, maybe up to even $1,500 in some years, on overpayments because of the way they were loaded into the payroll system. That did not affect the Board of Supervisors. It did affect the Planning Commission and a number of others, and you'll see this on your sheets. Any ones that are marked in the bright yellow there on your sheet, and I'll show the public here in a minute, you can see on the bright yellow, that's the difference in the amount that was paid versus the column to the left that should have been paid. So if you look in column G versus column M, you can see the totals underneath each group. Like under the Planning Commission in column G13, it shows 9,000. That's what should have been paid during that year. But when it got put into the payroll system in 2008, it got put in divided by 24. Now, there have been a number of changes to our payroll system over the years where we used to pay twice a month. Once a month, and there was a suggestion of twice a month, so I don't know if it's because of that, but the fact is when we audited these records in reviewing this project, we found those. So I'll explain what I recommend on those as we go forward. So the purchasing officer, Mr. Roche, has done this review for us, and the columns out to the right, he pulled in the dollar values from various localities around us. And the two that are, most of our boards and commissions and committees are well within the competitive ranges of our peers. The ones that are the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission. The James River Water Authority is listed on it because it's a significant board and our committee now that just really started, and we don't have any remuneration for that board or commission. And if you establish an architectural review board sometime in the future, you may want to consider remuneration for that as well. Now, I'm not suggesting that every board and commission requires pay. Most boards and commissions get some reimbursement if there are mileage use or personal expenses. But the ones that have to meet most regularly and do kind of most of the heavy lifting on those projects are the ones that have historically been paid in the past. So let me pull up this chart. Remember, the first column, that kind of pink column, that's what was approved in 2008. All the documentation I can pull shows that's the dollars that were approved for each board member in 2008 for the boards, committees, and commissions. Since 2008, some of them have been paid incorrectly, and so maybe, like for instance, Planning Commission got a total of not $750 between the five members, or between the six members, overpaid in a year. But because they were divided by 24 versus, and then paid by 26. So the column on to the right, the green proposed column.
You're saying $750 total.
In that year.
Total. Not total each member.
To all six members, $750.
You're talking about $100 a person.
Well, between all the boards and commissions and all the members, we're talking about $1,200 or $1,300 in a year that was overpaid for about 40 or 50 people.
That's what I'm just thinking. Of course, you're saying $750.
This is not any big windfall for anyone. It may have been $100 different in a year for an individual or $40 different for a year in an individual. And it's still a problem that needs to be corrected. But it's in the audit of those records, we found that discrepancy. And I think it was because when somebody loaded the system originally, when they plussed up from the old pay to a whole harmless pay of accounting for FICA and Social Security and federal withholding, somebody just loaded it wrong into the payroll system.
I just wanted to make it clear.
Right. It's not $750 is one person got it. The entire board, the Planning Commission board in an entire year.
Yeah.
So in the green column, what I try to do is just target a number that either makes sense to the peers out to the right in the averages that we looked at for the various counties that we looked at. We looked at Alamar, Louisiana, Warren, Scoochler, and Powhatan. Try to compare what they're paying to those similar types of boards and try to take into account that it's a tight fiscal year and what we want to do in the future. So largely, the ones below the Planning Commission, Board of Zoning Appeals, Social Services Board, Electoral Board, Jail Board, and Board of Equalization, I would suggest you leave those largely untouched. Now, let me go down through them a couple of times. If you go to the Board of Zoning Appeals, right now they've not met since the spring of 2010,
right.
And they get paid $60 per meeting. I wouldn't suggest that you change that now. It's $60 per meeting. If they meet again, it's still $60 per meeting. But we haven't had a need to do a BZA meeting since spring of 2010. spring of 2010, and I would recommend leaving it there at $60 per meeting is the flat rate. Social Services Board, the reason those numbers are slightly different is because if you look on your column J and column O for Social Services Board, Social Services Board was getting more, again, more than they were supposed to because, again, it had been divided by 24 rather than 26. So each member was getting a little bit more each year than what was originally called for. And so it meant a difference of $360 between all the Social Services Board members in a year. So I would suggest that just essentially hold them anonymous and leave them at where they are now and put those dollars in place. And so what they're getting paid now, make that the annual, and it's a new baseline rather than the original. It's only about $100 difference for the individual, but it's been 6 years as well.
So it would be $100 less?
No, it's actually what they're getting now. So if you look here, Mr. Obama, right now, Social Services Board Chair is getting $1,105 a year. It's $85 a month. They would continue to get $1,105 a year. The reason is originally they were supposed to get 10 and 20.
Gotcha.
But for the last 5 or 6 years, it's been just been paid incorrectly. And same way for the members and the Board Supervisor. Now, I wouldn't necessarily leave them there, except that in comparison to other localities, the other localities that we've compared to all pay essentially a $50 per meeting. And normally there are 12 meetings a year, sometimes one or two more, but 12 meetings a year would be $600. So we're already, you know, well above what the other ones were. And maybe it's because sometimes they do twice a month meetings or something. Even if these were twice a month, it'd be $1,200 and we're $1,105. That's just my recommendation based on the numbers that were there for comparison. So that's Social Services Board. The Electoral Board, I have the sense, and we'll have to ask the county attorney, I have the sense that these may have been, there were, at the time in 2008, there was a set state fee for electoral board members. The chair and vice chair get one amount, the secretary gets twice that amount. That's set by the state each year. Normally the order comes out in July of each year. In 2008, someone took those amounts from the state and plussed them up to account for federal taxes. And I'm not sure that that's, I don't think that's illegal, but the letter that comes out from the state that identifies how much you pay electoral board members does not state in there that you could, this is the minimum, plus you can pay them something else. It says this is what you pay them, and you can also pay for mileage or incidentals that go with it. For the registrar, in the same letter, it specifically says, here is the base amount for registrar, and if you want to pay supplemental, you can. So in other words, a plus up amount, like we do for constitutional officers. My reading of that letter says that here's the amount for electoral board, it changes every year, it goes up a little bit, and next year it will be a new amount. I'm not sure that we have, authority may be too strong, but it doesn't specifically state in the authorization letter that comes out that you can pay this amount plus a supplemental. It just says, here's what you pay electoral board members. So my suggestion would be the current letter, in this column down here to the right, the current letter through this June says 2064.50 and 41.29. That's what they should be paid. However, it's going to change, but we don't get the letter until July sometime. It'll probably go from about $150 for one and $100 for the chair.
So it's different for every county?
It is different for different counties, yes. We don't get the letter, we don't get I think it has something to do with population and the number of districts. But our letter comes out specifically for Fumana County, and here's the amount we get. There may be other counties surrounding that get a similar amount, but it's for us, we'll have a new rate in July. I just suggest, based on the way the letter is written, that we're supposed to then make sure they get paid that amount. I'm not sure there's a requirement, and it doesn't seem there's a requirement, to plus that up to account for taxes. It's just the amount of pay.
Right.
When you hire someone, we don't say your pay is $30,000, but we're going to plus it up by $3,000 to cover your taxes. We say it's $30,000. So my suggestion is to leave them where the current letter says, and it will change in July, and there won't be any choice. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what that amount's going to be. And last year it went from 4,009 to 4,129, went up by $100 for the secretary and $50 for the other two members. Mm-hmm. So that's the recommendation on the electoral board. On the jail board, there's really two questions associated with the jail board. That's set at a max of $1,200 per year, $85 per meeting attended. We get an attendance list, and if you attend the meeting, you get paid for it. If you don't attend the meeting, you don't get paid for it. Now, currently, the sheriff and Mr. David Haney are the representatives to that board. I checked with the county attorney. Paying Mr. Haney for his participation, I don't think is any problem. It's certainly authorized by state code. And paying the sheriff is a different story than paying, for instance, me on board, because he's a constitutional officer. If you, for instance, authorize pay in the future for JRWA, for the James River Water Authority, you would not give that same compensation to me, because I'm already a paid employee, and therefore that's part of my job.
Right.
It's different for a constitutional officer and for Mr. Haney as a citizen. So I think those could stay where they are. You could certainly consider changing those dollar values. They've been away for a number of years, but it's per meeting, and right now it's at $85, and I've just left it there. And then the Board of Equalization, you actually agreed a couple months ago that this coming year, when they work, they would go from $15 per hour to $20 per hour. That hasn't been changed since before 2007. So that's just in place. That was just a concurrence from the overall. So the ones that, and let's go back to the two that are a little more complicated price-wise. The Board of Supervisors, I would ignore that for now, because you cannot formally take action on that until after July of next year, when at least 40% of the board is up for re-election. And then any rate changes on that could not go into effect until January 1st of 2016. So I would just leave that one off the table for you now. You could certainly discuss it. You see the comparisons to other localities there. So we'll have that. We'll update those for next year. But really, you can't make a decision on that tonight anyway. On the Planning Commission, is significantly below our localities to be compared with in the surrounding area. I did a modest plus up for them, about 10% actually 20% on something. But they are still, if we go with the draft recommendation here, $2,100 and $1,800 for the Planning Commission members, that is still significantly below the averages.
Mm-hmm. It is.
$3,600 and $2,800 for other county surroundings.
Right.
But so is the BOS.
But the Planning Commission.
The BOS, you have to consider that's a really kind of a different category. It can't be considered until next year. But
the Planning Commission is weak. Just as much as we
I just don't know why we're not holding off until July of 15 and then do everything all at one time.
You can't, except it's been 6 years since any of these
people have been in the Planning Commission. They do a lot of work.
When it comes
to the Planning Commission, I'd be in favor of moving it a little more than the $200 a year.
That's true.
If you look on the screen here, that's how that is blocked. I would suggest maybe you eliminate Elmar from that equation and look at the other ones. You're kind of like $2,400 to
$3,000.
And about $1,800 to $2,100 for other members on planning commissions in similar sized counties. Elmar is significantly larger and does a little different thing. But you could easily take our planning commission numbers up to, say, $2,400 to $2,100 or something like that. It would be, right now, this increase is about $2,000 or about $1,400 a year. If you went up a little more, maybe about $2,000 a year, $2,500 a year, but that's what it is for the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about folks that have to go to formal training,
I would go for $2,400.
Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to come back to you with a formal proposal with motions with these. I just want to get a
sense from the board on the dollar values you'd like to see towards that.
I just don't see the sense of only going up $200 a year and making this big a change. And it's going to be for a long period of time. So I'd like to see them get a little more than that.
Well, the 2,400 puts them pretty smack square in the middle with our competitors. If you take Alamo,
I agree with you, but what you got here is...
No, that's why I'm asking you.
Why
this is the proposal.
Yeah. What did 24, you say? 24 for the chair.
Yes.
And for the members.
And 21.
20.
21.
Yeah.
Okay, so that will take it to $12,900 a year, which is the compensation we pay to the members. And right now we pay $9,750 a year. So it's $3,000 increase over the course of a year for planning commission, where you haven't changed their rate since 2008.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
And then any consideration on the other ones? Board of Appeals, I would leave.
My only other one was Social Services Board, and Mrs. Booker could add in on this. And if you're comparing it to other counties, there's no argument there. But the increase, just my realization over the past 3 months, and Mrs. Booker, I believe, for the last 5 years, the impact that board has and the amount of work, and I guess you can't count it by a meeting, because there's more to it than that when you get down to it. And that would be the only one I'd look at on an increase that offsets, that sort of offsets the outside average. But I defer to Mrs. Booker on that one.
Well, you know, I know that they meet once. They only meet once a month. What kind of work they do outside of the meeting, we don't have very many special call meetings. So I don't know. The compensation to me, Bob, looks pretty reasonable.
That's right. You did it for so one month. I would defer to it.
Yeah.
So it's $85 a meeting minus taxes.
Right. Yeah.
I think
it's pretty
reasonable. That would be reasonable. Everything else pretty straight.
Yeah. I think.
So the one I'll come back to, I think, in the next meeting, but with the Planning Commission, I will not bring these other ones back because there's no change necessary on those, but I'll come back with a full proposal with the motion on the Planning Commission so we have it, and then I'll put the Board of Supervisors on the table for next July if you so want to take up that time.
Yeah.
Have we had money set aside for ZBA? All this time?
This year's just a budget. I think you've got like $300 set aside just to cover a meeting or two if they had it.
If we had to have it.
Essentially not.
But that's been set aside for every year since 2008.
I don't know what they set aside in the prior years, but last year we cut it down to nothing. This year we cut it down to nothing. The times are on the BZA and I haven't met on the BZA either. So it's completely nominal. Not even rounding here, practically, it's so small. But we also cut down other boards and commissions that haven't meant that much either and got closer to the actual dollar figure.
Just so the public knows, where would this money come from if we approve it?
Yeah, now, the dollars on this one, we're going to propose to you that the increase in dollars on the Planning Commission will come from personnel contingency in next year's budget because we don't have it on a specific line. But it's $3,000 change from personnel contingency to the Planning Commission budget. The other ones, some of these I'm probably going to come back to with motions too, just to solidify the use of this dollar amount at this time, so I've got that pay plan laid out. Because I want to keep this chart kind of up to date so we've got a good series of them as we see as we go forward.
The other thing is mileage for board members. I've never done mileage. But there needs to be some consistency on...
That's already policy.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I want him to review, because we talked about it, the policy that we...
We actually put together an electronic version of that the other day, or over the weekend. I haven't sent the link to you. I sent it to Mr. Payne to have him look at it and see if it's a reasonable thing to do. I've got staff looking at it. I don't want to add too much weight to staff. But what I'd like to be able to do is I would like you, if you've got mileage or a meal expense or a parking and toll expense for your local travel or your local place, not coming back and forth to regular board meetings because that's an authorized reimbursement, but for other meetings that you do, it would be very simple to just click on a link, select your name, put the date in, what it was, and the miles driven, and that comes electronically to the county administrator's office, and we process your paperwork, you sign off on it, and then we pay it out. Mm-hmm. It would give us a better tracking of all any mileage that you do too, or any possible expenses. I know, Mr. Reeder, you do a kind of an annual list of things, but I think all of you would find that the system would be relatively easy, but I'll send you that link, and I'll send you the electronic form. Either way, if you fill out electronic and just print out, we'll take care of the paperwork and get in. But I think it's a mistake. It's delightful that some of you don't claim that mileage, but you are under-costing the operations of Savannah County when you don't get paid for the things you should be getting paid for, because when the next supervisor does get paid for it, now all of a sudden it's a good expense. And I'm not suggesting you have to do anything. I'm just suggesting that the real cost of an organization has to be considered. The real cost of an organization is the significant amount of time you spend on the road going to other meetings or going to visit citizens or going to citizen meetings. And right now, we're not really capturing any of that.
Can I go back to...
A little bit once in a while.
Sure.
Can I go back to January?
Yes, I'm only back to January easily. There would be no problem going back to January.
Yeah.
I'd be reticent to let you go back much farther than that.
Because all that means is in Charlottesville. I make my doctor's appointment, my eye appointment when I have to go to the meetings at Charlottesville.
Yeah, that's where you have to be careful when they come.
I'm going to be sending you a link to the form itself.
See what you think. We'll work it out with staff if we can make this easier. I would just like to have a master tracking list.
Yeah.
Anytime you have mileage or expenses, pop us in. I don't mean for trips to go to the Baco Conference.
No, because they pay for that.
That's a different process. That's for conference and overnight travel.
Right.
I'm talking about local travel mileage. Yeah. You run to Richmond for a meeting, there's a cost associated with that. You could always come in and check out a county car, but that would be unprecedented. So.
Right.
Well, even the jail board, whoever's on the jail board, they should hand them out.
Well, Mr. Haynes from the candidate, I'll have to look and see.
I would say Haynes.
The sheriff's office drives his county car. Okay, that's good. We need to.
So I'll come forward with that. But anyway, I've got a sense now of what you want on the boards and commissions. I'll come back to you on the next agenda thought with formal motion.
All right. Thank you.
I appreciate Mr. Rhodes doing all the work.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Rhodes.
We've got some really good comparisons now. I'm waiting for this to be done.
He's gone. Okay, consent agenda. Do we need to pull anything? Any of those reports? Anyone?
I would like to that you pull the resolution.
That D, resolution, Ms. Audrey Lightfoot Smith. This morning, Mr. Chesser called me. He does Meals on Wheels. Mm-hmm. And he went by Ms. Audrey's house and sat and talked to her for a long time. I had a nice conversation. He called me and told me all about what they talked about. Yeah, delightful lady. 45 years selling Avon's. That's how she raised her family.
That's wonderful.
Selling Avon.
I give him credit for that.
Me too.
So, if you'll permit me,
yes.
That means next year you'll get one.
I'd like to thank Ms. Weaver, too. Ms. Weaver did the light work and put this resolution together.
Yeah.
This is the resolution honoring Mrs. Audrey Lightfoot Smith, whereas Ms. Audrey Lightfoot Smith will be celebrating her 100th birthday on April 22nd, 2014, and whereas Mrs. Smith, the 7th of 13 children, was born on April 22nd, 1914, Savannah County, Virginia, to the late John and Andy Cooper Lightfoot. And whereas Mrs. Smith was married to the late Benjamin Smith, from this union she is the proud mother of three children, Thomas, John, and Peggy. Whereas Mrs. Smith has spent most of her life in service to the people of Savannah County. And whereas she worked selling Avon for 45 years. And whereas Mrs. Smith is being honored by the New Fork Baptist Church for her significant contributions to Savannah. And now therefore be it resolved that the Savannah County Board of Supervisors honors Mrs. Audrey Lightfoot Smith as she celebrates a rich life over the span of a century, adopted this 16th day of April 2014. That will be presented, I think, at a ceremony coming
yes,
up.
Yes, I've already given the plaque to this.
Quite a nice certificate beautiful. For a centenarian.
Mm-hmm. Centenarian.
Somebody that's older than me, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Would someone want to go over G, the contract addendum, exactly what you're doing there?
Land planning design.
That was G.
Mm-hmm.
I just want some information on it.
This is a contract addendum. This we came to you before for the original money for the additional $75,000.
Right.
That was two meetings ago. This is just formalizing that contract addendum that had to go through Fred's office, I believe, and then it required formal approval of the board. It's just kind of a
okay. I didn't see anything.
For the Pleasant Grove House, correct.
Pleasant Grove, right.
For them to finish outside meetings.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Can we have a motion for the consent agenda? Okay. Second, please.
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver, that we approve the consent agenda. And I failed to say what's in the consent agenda. Minutes of April the 2nd, 2014, resolution from Ms. Audrey Lightfoot Smith, fiscal year 14 Davenport case budget transfer, fiscal year 14 library computer replacement budget supplement, and contract addendum land planning design associates. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 5-0. Okay. We do not. Do we have any unfinished business, anyone? Any new business? We will have our second public comments. Please come to the mic and give your name and address. And you have 5 minutes, Mr.
Or
Hughes,
less.
Or less. Mr. Hughes.
He was a character. Could always count on a smile.
Bill Hughes, 24 Plum Court, Cunningham District. I just had two questions. We have a beautiful turnabout that was just built. We have a light pole that's down. I don't know if it's still alive. It's been sitting there now for almost maybe 3 weeks to a month. The curves, if you look at the curves now, they're starting to crack and deteriorate. And I'm wondering who's staying on top of this and if these things are going to be repaired.
Where is this?
The turnaround.
The roundabout. I noticed.
We have a electrical...
Did you report that down?
I don't know who to report it to. That's what I'm saying.
He's reporting.
But it's been down for almost a month now.
Yeah.
The light post, I know. I drive around every day too.
I know. Yeah. And the reason I'm bringing it up because my granddaughter asked me because she rides on a school bus.
Mm-hmm.
So she asked me if I came tonight or if I would ask.
We had sent it to VDOT.
Yeah, because you know they're right up the road doing work. That pole's been down. And I would also look at the fact that the curb areas are cracking already. I know people are riding over them, especially the trucks. So, we build things and then we don't maintain them.
Well, the county doesn't maintain roads. That's
well, you got to stay on top of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Second question. When are we going to settle the cell towers in the county? Cell towers.
Mm-hmm.
The Elon Musk
project? No. The cell towers on this Route 6 corridor.
They've all been approved.
And the contractors... When are we going to put some pressure on the contractor to build them?
It's
because you did discuss this in the past, that we were giving them a window, and if not, you were going to take action to put pressure on it. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because a lot of people ask us at the VFW, what's going on, Bill? The churches down there ask us, what's going on?
And they've changed some of that ordinance.
And they've changed some of the ordinances, yes. And I'm just saying...
They had been prodded to do that, too.
Right.
So...
Yeah. I'm just saying, that's... Okay, just... No, I just don't want to drop, that's all.
Right. Okay.
It's hard to get some of them to move, too.
I know.
As you might well.
I know. But they do it in Albemarle.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
Okay, thank
okay.
you.
Thank
you, Mr. Hughes.
We talked about it. Mr. Nichols and I.
That's part of what the code box is looking at now. Okay, to attract the older permits.
Is it easy to need to do it or get somebody else?
Okay, we do. It is due noted for both of those questions, and Mr. Nichols has been writing over there. Knowing him, he will get some answers or start us moving.
He was using shorthand, if you noticed.
Yes, I noticed that. All right, anyone else would like to speak to the board? Thank you. Yes.
Linda, am I correct understanding that the members of the board find it favorable for the incoming house, the people coming into the county, more of them finding it? Sorry.
Yeah, take your time.
Apologies. Is it found fit? Am I correct understanding that it is that you are all in agreement that you do like the amount of increased amount of people coming into this county? If I'm in correct understanding,
we can't answer that. I tell you what, make an appointment with the planning people, the man that gave the Mr. Lindsay J. or whoever's back there.
Let me just say, the county doesn't
plant. Yeah.
We don't recruit people to come in. We don't discourage people to come in. The best we can do is plan for it and accommodate the growth that either we're coming naturally or we're generated by economic development, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So and I think the question just needs to understand the nature of it.
Right, that we don't go out and tell people to come in. So
or stay away.
Yeah. Or say we don't want you. Right. So if Mr. Payne's answer, but if you need to sit down with someone, I would suggest you.
I think the questioner's question was probably based around
rather discussion.
The taxes around that.
Yeah.
So the comment. When people move in or don't move in, what's the impact on the county? So that's really the debate we were having, was the impact of residential growth.
Mm-hmm. It was always a
good question.
Good question. Okay. All right. Anyone else? If not, I will close the second public comment time. Do we have any new business? Unfinished business. I'm backing up on you all. Closed meeting.
Yes.
Mr. Weaver.
Madam Chairman, I move that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A.3 and Section 2.2-3711A.7. of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing real estate and legal matters.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. Weaver and seconded by Mr. Ullenbrook that we go into closed session. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? If not, we will enter into closed session.
Contempt.
Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me get around here. Get the right sheet. Madam Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, to the best of my knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meetings requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public businesses matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in a meeting with separate votes.
Okay. What do you say, Mr. Sheriff?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr.
Aye.
Chair says aye. Everybody in favor? What do we need to do next?
Close the meeting.
All right. Do I have a motion?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Do we have a second?
Oh, my goodness. You don't? Okay.
You can have a second, but if you do not have a second, the motion will be passed.
Okay.
But all I know is that if Mr. Weaver's ever out sick,
second.
No, I think no one else can run
it. All right.
Yeah, 24 years, I haven't got that number.
Calling for a motion to adjourn.
So right.
Second, it has been moved by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. Sheridan, that we adjourn. All in favor? Anyone opposed? We are adjourned. You all have a nice
Easter.
Easter.
Hey, I got a little in the truck.